And here we go, ladies and gentlemen. It is March the 15th, 2010, and you are listening to... Actually, ladies and gentlemen, I'm just going to go ahead and admit to the mistake I made here. This was supposed to be the Liberty Hour, but I pressed the wrong song for tonight. And so that means that tonight is the ugly truth. But nevertheless, ladies and gentlemen, I have my very good friend, confidant, comrade in arms, Phil Turney of the USS Liberty and my regular host of the Liberty Hour radio program with me tonight. So I guess we're kind of like half and half tonight. But anyway, having said that, before we jump into the program, ladies and gentlemen, we have a fascinating program ahead of you tonight. I want to wish a very happy birthday to my mother. Her birthday today, March the 15th, one of the greatest days in human history, ladies and gentlemen, because if Mom hadn't been born, I wouldn't be here.
I'm not sure this isn't a mixed blessing.
And there they are. There they are.
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, there is the one and only Phil Turney, a survivor of Israel's premeditated and deliberate attack upon his ship, USS Liberty, 43 years ago this upcoming June the 8th. And with us, we'll bring up our friend here in just a minute. He is not a stranger to this program, ladies and gentlemen, and I can guarantee you, you are going to be subjected to one hell of a fine radio program tonight with our guest, Phil Turney.
Yes, sir. How you doing, Mark?
And good.
Listen, it's okay. It's okay if we're not on the Liberty Hour, and we're on the Ugly Truth because they go hand in hand. We're trying to get the truth out, and the people that we get on the shore are just bring joy to my heart, especially the gentleman that's going to come up in just a minute. But also, I want to thank you, Mark. You work hard, and I know that you got a lot of pressure on you, and you get things done. And, with the book we've just written and the other book, we've been working pretty hard. And so I'll just go ahead and shut up and listen for a while. And
I'll tell you what, Phil, since you brought that up, let's just go ahead and give the folks out there a little bit of information about the book. Now, the book is done, ladies and gentlemen. We are just waiting for some proofs to be finished for the cover, but you can go ahead and view the cover of the new book, Phil Turney's new book, What I Saw That Day, by going to ussliberty.wordpress.com, and you will see right there on the front page, you will see the cover of the book. And it is, what can I say, it is a beautiful book, ladies and gentlemen. So far, all of the reviews we've gotten, the one word that seems to be repeated over and over again is that it is spellbinding, that you can't put it down once you start reading it. And I would have to concur with that, ladies and gentlemen. You'll rarely see me or hear me patting myself on the back. But with this particular project, ladies and gentlemen, I must say I am damn proud of it. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, as promised, we have a very special guest with us tonight. He has been on the program with us on at least two other occasions. Now, the reason that I decided to have this particular guest on is because he wrote what I consider to be an outstanding article that appeared this week on I don't know how many dozens of websites around the world. Generally speaking, whenever one of his articles hits the net, it's like candy in a kindergarten room. Everybody goes running for it to get their piece. And so, without any further ado, I want to go ahead and bring up tonight's guest, and it is Dr. Alan Sobrosky. Dr. Sobrosky, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Mark. Pleasure to be here.
Well, believe me, the pleasure is ours. As I said, this article that you wrote this week, there are very few articles that really catch my attention these days, as you can understand, Dr. Sobrosky, because there's just so much information out there and so many people talking. But this one particularly caught my interest and held my interest throughout the duration of this reading this article, which I will be reading here in just a minute. But before I jump into that, I'm just going to go ahead and give you the floor here and let you say some things that I think need to be said.
Mark, we had talked about this earlier, and, you know, my feelings are that I'm perfectly willing to debate issues with anyone on any subject. you know, most of us have different views of things, and, you know, none of us, I think, believes that we have the entire truth to ourselves. Anyone who does is a fool.
Mm-hmm.
But when on the subject that I wrote this time, it caught my attention as well, because if there is anything that is more significant, it is loyalty.
Mm-hmm.
Loyalty to country, loyalty to people, loyalty to Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
And to my displeasure and my shame, because I have some Jewish relatives, okay?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
None of whom is Zionist.
Mm-hmm.
That a large majority of American Jews give their allegiance to a foreign country.
Mm-hmm.
They may have American citizenship, but their allegiance is to Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said in the piece, this is a form of political bigamy that is every bit as dishonest as marital bigamy.
Right.
And marital bigamy, you know, I'm not married now, but when I was, I mean, loyalty to my spouse was absolute.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be there. I mean, I could look and say, aha, there is Farrah Fawcett. You know, and I could admire someone out there, but I didn't give that person my allegiance.
Right.
And there's a difference between admiring from a distance and giving allegiance
mm-hmm.
to that thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same with the country. I mean, there are Americans, you know, some of my relatives are German, some are Irish, you know, and all of them have a measure of allegiance to those cultures.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not a political allegiance.
Right.
It's, you know, it's a social allegiance. It's like, we're going to stand up on St. Paddy's Day, or we're going to stand up on Oktoberfest, or we're
mm-hmm.
going to celebrate this, and we're proud of being German or Irish or whatever it happens to be. But none of us gives our allegiance to Ireland or to Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Jews do. And if we don't say it, I don't care if we're called anti-Semites or
mm-hmm.
not. If we don't stand up and say, truth is truth, their allegiance to a foreign country, they are traitors, then we're dishonest to ourselves.
Well, and if it would be one thing, Doctor, it would be one thing if they had allegiance to this foreign country and this foreign country's national interests mimicked ours. But this isn't the case. I mean, look, we have here, as far as the third leg of this chair here today, is a man who experienced firsthand the fact that this other country, the national interests of this other country, are not the same as the national interests of this country.
But it's even more than that, Mark. I've had a bitter argument with one of my cousins, one of my Jewish cousins, who moved to Israel
mm-hmm.
and kept an American citizenship. You know, if someone loves another country enough to go there, more power to them. You know, they go, that's it, they're gone. But they keep the American citizenship
mm-hmm.
so that they can continue to participate in our elections,
mm-hmm.
stand in our offices.
Mm-hmm.
Look at Rahm Emanuel.
Exactly.
He's served in the Israeli armed forces, not in the American armed forces, and he is easily the second most powerful person in this country.
Yes.
Easily. That's treason.
Mm-hmm.
I will tell you right now, if Palestinians had the same influence in America,
sure.
I would oppose them in the
absolutely.
Same way.
Absolutely, absolutely.
You know, I don't care what the country is, what the allegiance is. What matters to me is that if you are American, you love this country
mm-hmm.
first, last, and that's the end of it.
Absolutely. First, second,
and
third.
And I don't care if you're Navy, Marine, whatever you are. Phil, you and I probably agree on this, and it's probably one of the few things that a Navy and a Marine guy would agree on, but you know, I think both of us would agree that loyalty to America is the only non-negotiable part of American citizenship.
Yep.
Absolutely, Alan. And I'll tell you, you being a United States Marine, that is inbred in you. And being a Marine, semper fidelis, always faithful. You're faithful to your country, and you know, I'm sorry you had the argument with your cousin, but you're still faithful to your country, and I understand exactly where you're coming from. And you know, Mark, I don't think at the beginning of the show that that you read the doctor's credentials off. I wish you would, because it means a lot, and it means a lot to me to hear them.
Absolutely, and I will do that right now since I'm about to launch into reading this excellent article. Alan Sobrowski, Ph.D., University of Michigan, is a 10-year U.S. Marine Corps veteran and a graduate of the U.S. Army War College. Now, not only that, Dr. Sobrowski, correct me if I'm wrong here, not only are you a graduate of the U.S. Army War College, but you were director of studies there for some period of time. Is that correct?
That's correct, for 5.5 years.
5.5 years as director of studies at the U.S. Army War College. You know, of all the things that I would love to be able to have trailing behind my name, Dr. Sobrowski, being the director of studies at the U.S. Army War College would definitely be one of them.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, as much as it's going to appear that I am acting as a schoolmarm here in reading this article to you, nevertheless, I'm going to do it not as an intellectually insulting gesture towards you, because I know you can all read very well. But I was so impressed with this article that I want it entered into the record here within the context of this conversation, and that's the reason that I'm going to read it. Dated March 12, 2010, by Dr. Alan Sobrowski, The Dark Face of Jewish Nationalism. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu once remarked to a Likud gathering that, quote, Israel is not like other countries, unquote. Oddly enough for him, that time he was telling the truth, and nowhere is that more evident than with Jewish nationalism, whether or not one pins the, quote, Zionist label on it or not. Nationalism in most countries and cultures can have both positive and negative aspects, unifying a people and sometimes leading them against their neighbors. Extremism can emerge, and often has, at least in part, in almost every nationalist independence movement I can recall, such as the French nationalist movement had the terror, quote-unquote, Kenya's had the Mau Mau, etc. But whereas extremism in other nationalist movements is an aberration, extremism in Jewish nationalism is the norm, pitting Zionist Jews, secular or observant, against the goyim, meaning non-Jews or everyone else, who are either possible predator or certain prey, if not both sequentially. This does not mean that all Jews or all Israelis feel and act this way by any means, but it does mean that Israel today is what it cannot avoid being and what it would be under any electable government. The difference between Jewish nationalism, known as Zionism, and that of other countries and cultures here, I think, are fourfold. One, Zionism is a real witch's brew of xenophobia, racism, ultranationalism, and militarism that places it way outside of a, quote, mere nationalist context. For example, when I was in Ireland, both parts, I saw no indication whatsoever that the Provisional Irish Republican Army or anyone else pressing for a united Ireland had a shred of design on shoving Protestants into camps or out of the country, although there may have well been a handful who thought that way, and goes far beyond the misery for others professed by the Nazis. Two, Zionism undermines civic loyalty. This is very important, ladies and gentlemen. I hate to break the cadence here, but pay attention to this. Zionism undermines civic loyalty among its adherents in other countries in a way that other nationalist movements and even ultranationalist movements like Nazism did not, such as a large majority of American Jews, including those who are not openly dual citizens, espouse a form of political bigamy called, quote, dual loyalty to Israel and to the U.S., that is every bit as dishonest as marital bigamy. Attempts to finesse the precedence they give to Israel over the U.S., lots of Rahm Emanuels out there who served in the Israeli army but not in the U.S. armed forces, and has absolutely no parallel in the sense of national or cultural identity espoused by any other definable ethnic or racial group in America. Even the Nazi Bund in the U.S. disappeared once Germany and the U.S. went to war, with almost all of its members volunteering for the U.S. armed forces. Three, the, quote, enemy of normal nationalist movements is the occupying power and perhaps its allies, And once independence is achieved, normal relations with the occupying power are truly the norm. But for Zionism, almost everyone out there is either an actual or potential enemy, differing only in proximity and placement on its very long list of enemies, which is now America's target list. And four, almost all nationalist movements, including the irredentist and secessionist variants, intend to create an independent state from a population in place or to reunite a separated people like the Sudeten Germans in the 1930s. It is very rare for it to include the wholesale displacement of another indigenous population, which is far more common of successful colonialist movements as in the U.S., and perhaps a reason why most Americans would not care too much about what the Israelis are doing to the Palestinians, even if they did know about it, is because that it is, in effect, no different than what Europeans in North America did to the Indians, Native Americans here, in a longer and more low-tech fashion. The implications of this for Middle East peace prospects and for other countries in thrall to their domestic Jewish lobbies or not are chilling. The Book of Deuteronomy, and for those of you out there who do not know what the Book of Deuteronomy is, that is part of the Old Testament. I think it's, let's see, there's Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, I think it's the fourth book of the Old Testament.
It is. It's part of the Pentateuch, one of the five books of Judaism.
Okay. The Book of Deuteronomy comes to life in a state with a nuclear arsenal would be enough to give pause to anyone not bought or bribed into submission, which these days encompasses the U.S. government, given Israel's affinity for throwing crap into the face of the Obama administration, and Obama's visible affinity for accepting it with a smile, Bibi Netanyahu's own, quote, Uncle Tom come to Washington. The late General Moshe Dayan, who, Zionist or not, remains an honored part of the pantheon of military heroes, allegedly observed that Israel's security depended upon it being viewed by others as a, quote, mad dog. He may have been correct, but he neglected to note that the preferred response of everyone else is to kill that mad dog before it can decide to go berserk and bite. It is an option worth considering. So writes Alan Sabrowski, Ph.D., former director of studies at the U.S. Army War College. Dr. Sabrowski, I cannot think of an article that I have read in recent memory that basically sums up the problem that we are dealing with right now as accurately and as succinctly as this essay that you have written. You have, for all intents and purposes, nailed this thing on the head. And I guess the reason why I got so excited over this article, Doctor, is because one of the things that I have noted about the problem that we're dealing with in terms of Zionism, the power of the Jewish lobby and whatnot, is that everything is shrouded in some type of confusion or mystery, okay? And I think deliberately so. I think deliberately so. I think that one of the biggest components to this powerful foreign interest being able to get as far as it has, I mean, let's face it, it got away with attacking a United States ship for close to 2 hours, killing 34 men. This was an act of war. They got away. Not only did they get away with it, they were rewarded with $3 billion a year minimum. When we look at the two wars that the United States finds herself in and on the cusp of at least two others, and all of this for the benefit of a certain foreign a country sitting on the eastern shores of the Mediterranean Sea, they have been wildly successful at bringing all of this about, and I think one of the main components of this is the fact that very few people really understand the nature of the problem. And I think that your article here basically lays out the problem, which is that when you have people who try to make this claim that they are loyal to America and at the same time loyal to a foreign government, it is a lie.
It is, and it's more than that, Mark. What we need to stand up and say is not only did they attack the USS Liberty, they did 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
They did it. I have had long conversations over the past 2 weeks with contacts at the Army War College, at Headquarters Marine Corps, and I've made it absolutely clear in both cases that it is 100% certain that 9/11 was a Mossad operation,
mm-hmm.
period.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and, you know, Phil, I don't denigrate what happened to USS Liberty in the slightest. You understand that. But for most Americans, you know, what happened in to the USS Liberty or in Vietnam was history.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is history. You know, they can be concerned about it, but they're not going to get mad about it.
Right.
9/11 has led directly to 60,000 Americans dead and wounded. God knows how many hundreds of thousands of people in other countries that we've killed or wounded or made homeless.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an ongoing sore. It's not your sore from the USS Liberty. It's not my sore from Vietnam. Both of us have those. Both of us care about it. But this is an ongoing, this is an open wound. And what Americans need to understand is they did it.
Mm-hmm.
They did it. And if they do understand that, Israel's going to disappear. Israel will flat-ass disappear from this earth. If you know, I sent a film to one of my colleagues, and it basically had Americans grieving over their dead coming back.
Mm-hmm.
And I showed one of them. It was a woman just wrenched by grief, you know, over her dead soldier.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, if Americans ever know that Israel did this, they're going to scrub them off the earth, and they're not going to give a rat's ass, forgive my language, what the cost is. They are not going to care. They will do it.
Alan, you
and
know...
And they should.
Alan, your article and your heart and your testimony and what you believe in is heart-wrenching to me. It is like our founding fathers in their shadows talking and saying, we have to fix this. We have to make our own way, and we have to do it now or we will go down.
Exactly.
And
absolutely, Phil. I agree fully.
Your article needs to be shipped off to the Library of Congress immediately.
Well, I can tell you it's being read by some people in headquarters, Marine Corps, and at the Army War College. I sent it off to them this past week, and I've had some long discussions with people up there, and there are some really, really unhappy people.
What are they saying? If you can talk about that, Dr. Sprosky, what, you know, I'm curious.
Astonishment.
Okay.
The first thing, Mark, is astonishment. They didn't know. They truly didn't know. And these are not unintelligent people. They really didn't know. And the next statement is rage.
Mm-hmm.
Real rage. And the Zionists are playing this as truly an all-or-nothing exercise.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they lose this one...
That's it.
If the American people ever realize what's
right.
happened,
mm-hmm.
they're done.
That's it.
And
yeah.
and I will tell you frankly, I don't think either one of you has any Jewish ancestry. I do. You know, I have one grandparent who's Jewish. As Phil Weiss from Mondo Weiss and I were talking about it, you know, he's a Jewish guy who puts a lot of critical stuff out there on Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, for the Orthodox rabbinate, I'm not a Jew. You know, for the Nazis, I've been there.
Right.
You know, and if this explodes, I'm going to go down with the rest of them.
Right.
And I know this. I flat out know this.
Mm-hmm.
But if that was the price for making America whole again,
mm-hmm.
when I took my oath 51 years ago to the United States Marine Corps, no one promised us life. No one did.
Mm-hmm.
They promised us duty and loyalty and service and maybe death.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they talked to us in 1959. I don't think they talked to them that way anymore. But in 1959, they did. And if my death were a requirement
mm-hmm.
for the saving of America, well, hell, I could have died in Vietnam.
Right.
You know, it's my service, my country, my corps. And Phil, it's like you in the Navy. You know, we we signed on to this and we love our service, and none of us wishes to die. I mean, certainly I don't. You know, I don't think either one of you guys do. But if that's the price, then that's the price I pay. I mean that.
You know, Alan, when you're talking about Marines, I have the utmost respect, and I know your duty to country. And, you know, when the torpedo hit our ship, and I opened up the scuttle, guess who I pulled out of there? A United States Marine named Bryce Lockwood.
Mm-hmm.
And he was holding on to another sailor and saved his life, and he received a Silver Star. And God bless him for that. And I understand wholeheartedly what's in your heart, because I have it in my heart. I didn't learn it by becoming a sailor as such, but I learned it through the grace of God for saving our ship. I learned it through scholars like you. I've learned it through good friends like Mark Glenn and my shipmates, and I've learned it through actions of Israel. And when you struck me very, very hard just a second ago when you thought about 911, you're very willing to say that, yeah, they did it, 911. Yes, they did. And you know, my heart broke, and I saw that plane, the last one, go into the tower.
Mm-hmm.
And to see that, I mean, I know it's in your heart, Mark's, and everybody else's, to see your fellow Americans being slaughtered and murdered just as they did the USS Liberty, Alan, it is something that if we don't talk about it, if we don't tell people about it, I believe God wants us to. I believe God wants us to, and if we don't, shame on us.
Well, it's not just that.
I agree very much on that side, and I'll tell you, if you know, I have a dream, as Martin Luther King Jr. once said, you know, and my dream is that the 5th and 6th U.S. fleets take Israel and cream it.
Well, you know what, just for the record.
And that's the end of it.
Just for the record.
Absolutely.
Just for the record, Dr. Sprosky, it was about 3 years ago, and I can remember distinctly I was on a radio program, and this was in the run-up to the reunion that the Liberty guys were going to be having in D.C., and I made a prediction on the air that I believed with all my heart at the time, and I believe with all my heart now. But someday, some way, I don't know exactly how it's going to happen. I have my suspicions. But someday and some way, maybe a lot sooner than any of us realize, the United States is going to find herself at war with Israel. And I mean a real live shooting war. Now, technically speaking, we are at war with her because she is at war with us. She is out to destroy us. We just haven't figured it out yet. My personal prediction is that probably, again, sooner than any of us realize or would like to envision, Israel is going to pull off another 9/11. She's going to pull off another USS Liberty. Obviously, some pretty powerful people in some pretty prominent places, such as Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff Mike Mullen, believe that this is a possibility because he cut short a trip that he had made to Europe a few years ago to hastily fly to Israel to meet with his counterpart and warn him in no uncertain terms how important it was that there not be another USS Liberty Part 2. So, and as far as what you two fellows were just talking about, that we need to talk about this, I'm going to offer another theory here for discussion. We would already have had that 9/11 Part 2 or that USS Liberty Part 2. That would already have been a fait accompli were it not for the fact that a growing number of people have been talking about this problem now for the last, since 9/11. I think that Israel has been watching all of this and has been saying we need to kind of let things cool down a little bit for now. If we pull another one off, try to pull another one off right now, then that's it. We're going to blow our cover.
It's not only a matter of blowing our cover. If Americans ever truly understand that, they're history. You know, it'll be a bloody, brutal war, and they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is it's not even going to be a close contest.
Well,
and they know that, and what they understand, I think, as well, is that their leverage is on the political appointments.
Mm-hmm.
Their leverage is not in the uniformed services. There are lots. If you pick up the Army Times or the Navy Times or any of the journals of any of the services, you get a very different view than you get, you know, looking at the Congress and the White House.
Mm-hmm.
And the military has not been bought. The military is loyal, but it has not been bought.
Mm-hmm.
And if it ever understands this, really, really deeply understands this, and this is what I got when I put some of these things to the Army War College and to Headquarters Marine Corps, and I mentioned to a contact at Headquarters Marine Corps, I said, you know, they did 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you don't mean it. I said, absolutely. And if they ever understand that, these people are history.
Well, now let me ask you something, Doctor. And obviously, I understand that, you know, you've got, we need to protect the names of the innocent here, and you know, this is
there are no innocent.
Okay. I'd like to know a little bit more about this. I mean, these conversations that you're having with your colleagues who are still serving in uniform, what is the reaction on their part when you tell them things like this?
First, a disbelief. And what I show them immediately afterwards is an interview with a Danish demolitions expert,
mm-hmm,
named Danny Jawenko,
mm-hmm,
and it shows the third building at the World Trade Center going down,
mm-hmm,
WTC-7.
Right.
And they look at that, and I said, now you understand that if one of the buildings was wired for demolition, all of them were wired for demolition.
Right.
And that's it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the tipping point.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, getting into arguments about who was flying what and where they were and whether there was nanothermite, those things are true, but they're incidental.
Right.
The thing that's necessary is to tell people three buildings went down, the third was not hit by a plane, it was wired for controlled demolition, therefore all of them were wired for, mm-hmm, controlled demolition, and at that point the reaction is rage. First disbelief and then rage.
Well, I got to tell you, that I find to be very encouraging because, you know, based upon the cursory conversations I have with some military people, and I have to be real careful about what I say because you just don't know what you're walking into when you start a discussion of this type with one of them. Based upon these, as I said, cursory conversations that I've had with some of them, they're clueless and they don't want to hear about it. You know, they are loyal to the flag that is on that on their left sleeve on as a patch, and the thought that the government could be in any way involved in any kind of high crimes and treason against the United States, people of the United States, is just unthinkable to them. So I'm glad to hear that there are some. There still is some gray matter and some patriotism left, at least in the circles where you travel, Dr. Sobrowski.
Well, I mean, it's not that they don't want to hear it. It's that they don't know of it. And, you know, what I have done when I presented it to these people and I said, just look at this. Just look at this picture. You know, I'm not going to give you an argument. Just look at it. And they look at the film, and without exception, they come back and they say, they did it, didn't they? I said, yep, they did it.
You know, can I jump in here for a second?
Yes.
I just wanted to mention that talking about military people, some of the most distinguished military people that I've ever had the pleasure to be around is Admiral Thomas Moore, former Joint Chiefs of Staff, which supported us completely, the USS, mm-hmm, Liberty investigation and so on and so forth. And then Ray Davis, he was the commandant of the United States Marine Corps,
mm-hmm,
and he directly said that the this is of course not going to 9/11, but he directly said that the USS Liberty was a not a mistaken identity. It was a a act of cold-blooded premeditated murder. So there are people out there in the military, and now these guys were retired at the time, but when you're educating people like you're doing, Alan, people just in the military now, you're exactly right. They just don't know because nobody knows. It's been hit up. Everything's been hit. It's been covered up so good that it's, it'll almost take a messiah to get us out of this thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Dr. Zebrowski, I wanted to ask you, since we are, to a certain degree, prognosticating today and making predictions, what do you think is going to happen here? I mean, you know, I was having a conversation with someone the other day about this situation with Iran. And the fact of the matter is that irrespective of whether or not Iran is actually actively engaged in building a nuclear weapon or not, the fact of the matter is that Israel cannot afford to have this war not take place. There has to be something that takes place, even if it's just lobbing a couple of bombs into Iran and then really spectacularizing it through their control of the media. They have to do something to recoup some of their public image. So would you agree with me on that? And assuming that you do agree with me on that, what do you think Israel is going to be doing in the near future?
We're going to have a war with Iran. And my guess is that the Arab street is going to explode.
I agree.
And American forces, American units, like 5th Fleet Headquarters in Bahrain, the rest of it, you know, there's going to be a casualty list that we're not even going to care to think about.
Alan, you know, I think this thing was predestined from day one. They started in Afghanistan. They go to Iraq, and Iran has been the big prize all along. What do you think?
Yep. No question at all. And in fact, if the Iraqi resistance hadn't been so strong, it would have already happened in the second Bush administration.
Absolutely. I agree 100%.
So all of this reticence, reluctance, whatever you want to call it, what appears to be reticence and reluctance on the part of the Obama administration, what do you think is going on? I mean, look, just this past week, we had some what I consider to be pretty dramatic things being said on the part of the Obama administration with regards to Israel, with the settlements and whatnot. What is this? Is this just posturing on the part of the Obama administration, or are they really trying to pull back on the reins?
The Obama administration hasn't withheld a single dollar, a single plane, nothing. You know, words are cheap. You know, that's the Israelis made a tactical error in that they insulted Biden, and Biden is not one of my favorite people. But he is a street smart guy, and he doesn't like being humiliated.
Sure, sure.
You know, I mean, this is a given. But nothing has happened to affect, in a tangible sense, anything that we're giving to Israel. Nothing. And as long as nothing happens to tangibly affect what we're giving to them, nothing else will matter.
Okay. So why are we not already at war with Iran then?
Partly because we can't find a good enough excuse for it that will allow us to sidestep what we're doing in Afghanistan and to a lesser extent Iraq.
Okay.
You know, it's that there's just a little too much there. I'm pretty sure that the pattern was Afghanistan in 2001, Iraq 2003, Iran 2005, Syria 2007.
Okay.
The problem was that the Iraqi resistance didn't let that happen.
I see.
So now the time frame is a little bit different, and I'm not sure how that's going to play out. But I think that, you know, the way we're going to it is to try and create an excuse for a war. And after the war takes place, you know, people can question it, but it doesn't change the fact of the war.
You're right. If it's anything that we learned from Vietnam, is that once the troops are committed, right or wrong, you stand by the troops. I mean, that's one of the things that I noticed with the first Gulf War, and this is before I knew anything about anything. I thought, boy, when you look at the kind of protests that took place, and I was in college at the time of the first Gulf War, when you look at the kind of protests that took place during Vietnam, and of course on college you had a few people grumbling and saying this and saying that, but in general, the neocons really played the whole Vietnam thing beautifully, if such a word can be used for something as tragic as that. And don't misunderstand me, Dr. Sobrowski. I know that you're a Vietnam vet, and I hold these guys in the highest regard. So when I say they played this thing beautifully, you know, they made the protesters look like these grotesque, ugly, unpatriotic people to the point where when the next big war started, nobody would. I thought, boy, when you look at the kind of protests that took place, and I was in college at the time of the first Gulf War, when you look at the kind of protests that took place during Vietnam, and of course on college you had a few people grumbling and saying this and saying that, but in general, the neocons really played the whole Vietnam thing beautifully, if such a word can be used for something as tragic as that. And don't misunderstand me, Dr. Sobrowski. I know that you're a Vietnam vet, and I hold these guys in the highest regard. So when I say they played this thing beautifully, you know, they made the protesters look like these grotesque, ugly, unpatriotic people to the point where when the next big war started, nobody would dare raise their voice up against the troops the way that they did in Vietnam.
Yep, absolutely on it. Mark, I'm going to have to separate in just a minute. I have a business client I have to get to for this evening.
But actually, that's fine because
if I could make sort of a concluding statement.
Okay.
And Phil, I think that you would second me on this. Nothing to me is more important than loyalty to or allegiance to my country. Nothing is. But that requires my country and my government to also behave in an honorable fashion. Our government today does not behave in an honorable fashion. And there is something in the Declaration of Independence which says that whenever any form of government becomes oppressive of these ends, it is the right and duty of the people to alter or abolish it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we have gone to the point that we need to alter or abolish it. And I say that as a man who spent his entire life loyal to the United States.
Well, I
understand. God bless you for that.
Go ahead, Phil. You go ahead. No, we're gonna go ahead and cut this thing just a few minutes short, guys, since I know you do have business concerns, Dr. Sobrowski. Ladies and gentlemen, The Dark Face of Jewish Nationalism. Please look it up on the internet. I don't think that you're going to have any trouble finding it. Written by our very good friend and special guest tonight, Dr. Alan Sobrowski. Doctor, I hope that we will be lucky enough to have you back on the program in the near future. And in the meantime, please keep up your excellent work. I honestly, as much as this is going to sound like posturing to you, there are very few people, as I've said, who say anything that really causes me to take a double take and to sit down and pay attention, and you're definitely one of them.
I appreciate that, Mark. You take care of yourself, Phil.
Yeah.
Warmest regards. Semper Fi to you, my friend.
Semper Fi. God bless you, sir. And we will talk again. And, Mark, I just wanted to thank you, sir. And I have to add this one thing, Mark.
You've got plenty of time, Phil. Go right ahead.
You remember, Mark, when I went to the State Department, about 3-4 years ago?
Yes.
And there was a fellow there by the name of Mark Susser.
Yes.
He worked for the State Department, and he was, I think, director of history or director of something. But he certainly wasn't a very fair man.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I found out today, Mark, by the way, he's Jewish. Mark Susser worked for the State Department, used to, got fired for malfeasance. And I want you to just for 1 second explain the word malfeasance for being terminated. What does that mean?
The way I understand it, malfeasance, as opposed to malpractice, malfeasance is negligence with malice included in it. So it's a very personal charge. Malpractice just means that you screwed up and you're an idiot, whereas malfeasance means that you screwed up, but you did it deliberately, if I understand it correctly. So, yeah, and ladies and gentlemen, you'll be able to read all about this Mark Susser character in Phil's new book, What I Saw That Day, as Phil recounts the way that he was shamefully treated when the State Department had a symposium several years ago to discuss the USS Liberty attack, and they had on there that horrible traitor, Aaron Crystal, who wrote the book, The Liberty Incident. And so one of the more interesting parts of that book dealing with Mark Susser. Phil, we are going to run out of music here in just a second, so I'm going to go ahead and close out the show. But hang on, I'm going to talk to you off the air, okay?
Absolutely. Thanks, Mark, and great show today. And God bless Alan. He's quite a guy.
Absolutely. All right, ladies and gentlemen, there you go. You heard it here, this March 15th, 2010 edition of the Ugly Truth podcast, heard on this fine podcasting network, theuglytruth.podbean.com. I want to thank my very good friend Phil Turney for coming on the air. Always great to have Phil on. And, of course, I want to, again, wish a very happy birthday to my dear mother. Ladies and gentlemen, that's it for tonight. Hopefully we will be rejoined sometime this week, God willing. Until then, go out, do what you can to save this country, ladies and gentlemen. If not for yourself, then for your progeny, your kids and your grandkids. And above all else, ladies and gentlemen, keep the faith.